I'm opening.
We have
an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro, this is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Get it out.
Hello, everybody. Obviously, we are all excited. Welcome back to Anatomy of a Movie. Today, we are doing The Fault in Our Stars, the book adaptation from John Green. I'm your host, Marissa Serafini, and today we have a full panel.
Yeah, we do.
Hi, guys. I'm Sarah Stratton.
Hey, I'm Jeffrey Masters.
I'm Roxy Stryer.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, Jeffrey, to the panel.
Thank you.
Jeffrey is a host for the Book Circle Online, and you actually did the Fault in Our Stars podcast for that.
We did, yes.
So I'm doing a little
check that out.
Excellent.
So joining.
Jeffrey's going to be our book savant today for this podcast.
I feel honored to be sitting next to you.
You should. I like that title.
Yes, he's...
I'm going to update Twitter 1 second.
There you go. There you go. All right, so what were your overall thoughts of this film?
I'm scared to talk about it because I thought it was so incredibly beautiful. I cried pretty much throughout the entire thing, which I honestly, believe it or not, don't do all of the time. I thought it was the best movie I've seen in a very, very long time.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's a strong wreck.
I loved it. I loved it.
Very adamant about it. Okay.
Yes.
Wow. I mean, I really liked it a lot. Book adaptations always make me nervous because I'm like so connected to the character and the plots, and they have to change things just like cinematically. I thought it was really good. I really enjoyed it.
Sarah.
Hmm. There are so many things that I loved about this movie, and I'm really excited to talk about them. A lot of them are script-driven, story-driven, music. A lot of the elements that brought this film together, I love.
Yeah.
And I think were done excellently. To me, it's going to take a lot of justification, so I'm going to have to explain it later, because it doesn't sound good off the bat. I was not completely gung-ho in love with them as a couple. So, they had chemistry. They had a specific relationship with each other that I did believe, but that relationship did not hold up to my expectations of what I really look for in a love story. So that's...
Are you able to, specify what was missing in their relationship? Like, the chemistry, was it?
This is how I can describe it. It's like, to me... I loved each of their characters. I thought that they were very connected to them, felt very truthful. I liked even who they were as people. I thought that their relationship was very much like, we're in love, but we're best friend in love. And I'm not saying that, like, in real relationships in real life, that does work. Those two exist. Like, marriages are built off of a best friend relationship. But I'm used to going to a love story and being like, oh, that's that person's match. That's their one and only four. And that is very idealistic. That is very like a dream scenario of love. But you look at your token love story movies, like, you know, that end in tragedy, like Romeo and Juliet, Titanic, The Notebook, like, or whatever. Like, all these things are built on these great loves. And you really, for me, you leave those movies being like, those two people are completely 100% meant for each other. And, like, when Rose loses Jack at the end, your heart wrenches because you're like, oh, she loved him so much and he was hers. And, like if you watch The Notebook, I'm doing a lot of references here, but she has two guys at the end. And you can say that both of them are amazing. You know, they're both good guys. She has relationships with both of them. But if she doesn't end up with Noah, you are very upset. If she had ended up with Lon, he's a good pick. He's a nice guy. She loves him. But it's not that, like, ground-shattering love. And in this movie, they matched. The relationship worked. They were friends. But it wasn't a... And I'll be all love to me.
I mean, I kind of agree with that. Because we see... We're seeing a romance film. This is a romantic film. But I felt like they definitely had on-screen chemistry, yes. But I felt their storyline and how they progressed as a romantic couple took too long. And that's what kind of took me out of it, which made me didn't really believe their romance yet. I'm like, okay, they're already at that platonic friend stage. I'm like, how far can we go from there? Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. And it did with this film. Overall, I thought this film was really well done. film color visually looked beautiful. The acting was spot on, spectacular. But I will give it to some of the story and the development of some of the characters. I still had questions with that.
What you guys are speaking about is the concept of the one. That's the basic way of putting it, that you love movies where you are convinced afterwards that that was the one and the only. And I am a hopeless romantic, and I totally get what you're saying. I had a very different experience, though. This made me walk out and think to myself, oh my God, I deserve better. When you look at the guys and you look at the guys that you've seen, or you look at the people you've dated and you think, I could end up with that person. That would be fine. This made me walk out and think that I want to find my Augustus Waters. Like, that is what I walked out thinking, which to me made me certain that they accomplished what they were trying to do. Because I felt like we are not that necessarily there is only one, but we are supposed to end up with somebody in some way. You have to, if you are hopeless romantic, you do believe in things like that. You do believe in this higher power. And I thought it was so incredibly beautiful. I thought that the way that he fell so fast and the way that she fell like she was falling asleep very slowly and then all of a sudden at once was perfect.
Yeah. And I have to say that in the book, the relationship is such a like slow moving process and in like a beautiful way that halfway through the book, I'm like, holy crap, these two lovers have not kissed yet. So when it does happen, it was like, yes. And I think we're so used to seeing like the timeline of relationships just like progress evenly that it like maybe threw you guys off that it hadn't.
In the book, yeah. Was it in the Anne Frank house?
Yes.
That they kissed? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And my question to you, Jeffrey, because you actually read the book, you already had this pre-existing thought of these characters. Did Shailene Woodley and
Ansel Elgort. Yeah.
Ansel Elgort. Did they live up to the characters that you were expecting having read the book?
I have to say that I've always thought that Shailene Woodley was like fine, but I was never particularly impressed with her, and I thought she was unbelievable. I thought that she covered up a lot of like plot issues and like scene issues that I had. And him, it wasn't the way I initially envisioned it, but I thought it worked. And I thought he was like odd and charming and like kind of quirky.
Okay.
Definitely quirky.
Yeah.
He was a funny kid. Like, he really... That's a challenging character.
He's a few years younger than she is.
No, he's older.
No, he was born in 94, I think, and she was 91.
In real life, you mean?
Yeah. In the story, the actors, mm-hmm. I just think that it could have been a little intimidating mm-hmm. working with an older lady.
But they worked together before.
Yeah, they did.
They're a brother-sister,
they
right?
They have lots of relationships going on. You know.
But they're also off-screen very close now. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether they originally met in Divergent or how they met, but I know that they met
through Divergent.
Yeah, and they became so close that she pulled him onto this project, or at least pulled him into the audition.
Yeah.
Made him read the book.
Yeah, going back to your problem with the relationship... maybe, would you say, like, you thought 90% of it was, like, perfect, and, like, 10% you were, like, kind of, like, iffy about, maybe? I wonder that if that 10%, I'm making that number up for you, is that they will, one or both of them will, like, not make it to 20 years old. And so, like, that death is maybe, like, in the way of, like, them falling in love, maybe in your mind.
I think it's not so much as, like, that I don't believe in them caring about each other or loving each other. It was just hard for it to... impact me as much as other movies have impacted me, because I am a romantic and I do like that factor of that huge swirling romance that kind of you lose yourself in.
Yeah.
And he felt it at first and then she didn't. And I'm not saying that that's not realistic.
Of course.
I think it is. I think that that's totally honest and happens all the time. I think relationships get brought up in friendships, relationships bloom out of like, I'm not saying that that doesn't exist, because it does. And in that, it was truthful. And that's why I liked the movie. I just wasn't head over heels with the movie, because when I think of epic love stories, it doesn't rank as high as other ones.
Now,
I would categorize this film as a good film. I would categorize this movie as having really strong themes and having, like, I would just look at it as a good drama.
Okay.
Versus a good, like, or like a great drama versus a great love story.
Totally.
Like, I'm not going to group this in with my Titanic's, I'm going to group it in with more of like my Silver Linings Playbook. More of, it's more to me yeah. in that genre.
Oh, I thought that was a great love story.
My question is, if you take away the cancer stories for both of them, would this film live up to those types of movies?
Well, I think that is the story, though. You know, like, if you take away the fact that they're on a boat, would Titanic be as memorable? You know, I think that is such a huge thing that you can't really take that away. But what I loved about this movie is that it was exactly what it said it would be in the first 20 seconds of the movie. You know, this, like what Sarah just described, is exactly what she starts by saying. This isn't the romantic movie that you've seen, that you are familiar with, that people fall head over heels, that they're happy, whatever. I thought that this movie was very honest with itself. I thought that it knew what it was and it knew what it wasn't. And I think that, you know, you can't please everybody. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we all are mostly pleased, at least, is very, very, yeah. It speaks testaments about this movie. And I appreciate what you guys are saying, and you are making me look at it a different way in their relationship, but it's so hard for me because I felt like they were so strong together that it carried the whole film for me. So if I didn't feel that way, I would feel completely different about the entire movie.
Mm-hmm. I think another reason why I was having a hard time with the chemistry, because we see Augustus, he's a very personable, charming guy, and he's very assertive mm-hmm. towards Hazel. And you can see Hazel at the beginning of the movie, she's very depressed, she's angry with the world and angry, and she's not the happy person. So Augustus is the nice foil to her emotions. And I thought, and then throughout the movie you can see her resistance here and there, but she's slowly you know, letting those that hard layer of her, you know, shed. And she's being open to Augustus, having him read her book and, like, bonding over things like that. I thought that there was just too much resistance at the beginning that made me hard to, like them to click together and have that first true love and, you know, true love at first sight kind of deal. And I didn't see that.
Are you like Sarah, where you thought it was realistic but you still didn't love it, or did you not think it was realistic?
I kind of had a problem with Augustus because I'm sure there are actually guys like him out there with great personable, charming personalities like that. I'm like, I haven't seen guys like that, so I had a hard time believing.
Mm. Oh, really? See, she had resistance in the beginning, but she explained it. Like she said, I'm a grenade. You know, one day I'm not going to be here, so why am I going to, like, put you through a relationship mm-hmm. and I'm going to leave you?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. She kept putting up those barriers with her and, like, allowing herself to fully fall in love.
I just thought it was so amazing how the whole time she's trying to figure out what happens when she's gone. Does life move on when she's gone? We all figure she's going to be the one to right. go. You know, that's the way that they clearly were trying to steer us. And then she has to live with what happens when he's gone. And she actually sees firsthand, you know, that to me was like, and that has to do with the book. You know, that's the writing. Yeah. That was such a flawless concept that I was completely thrown for a loop there, that I was like, oh my god, you know.
Oh wait, so you guys watching the movie were surprised when it was Augustus
who knocked died. Me on my ass.
Oh yeah. You guys too?
Not thoroughly surprised, but no. I think that like I figured it out part of the way through. I knew one of them right. was going to die. Mm-hmm. I was like, as there's parts of the movie where I was like, oh, maybe both of them are
yeah.
yeah, I was like, maybe it's, you know, who knows. I knew one of them was going, there right. was no way they're making out of this thing like
yeah,
together.
Because the book is written. Did you really?
Yeah.
And the book is written first person point of view, so it's all her. It's like almost like journal style. Like it's very like
also
casual.
How could she
and
die?
Yeah. So reading the book, I was like, well, obviously Hazel can't die unless like another narrator pops up. Mm-hmm. You know.
And
that wasn't going to happen.
Or if the book ends in the middle of a sentence.
Yeah.
But that's where I picked it up. I'm like, okay, we already have our protagonist. You can see her constantly going through this fight and fighting her cancers, and then like near the end of it she's becoming more happy, a happier person, and accepting everything that's going on. And then you can see the deterioration of Augustus and him introducing himself in the first meeting, that first support meeting, that he used to have it. I'm like, okay, we know that he's already had it, good chances it's probably gonna come back.
Yeah.
So for me, and maybe I watched too many films and television shows, I knew his death was imminent.
Yeah, especially mm-hmm. when he gives the whole speech about oblivion. Looking back, there was a lot of foreshadowing, and I'm like, oh, well, I just was very swept up in this, but I'm somebody who believes you. When you tell me something, I believe you. And so I believed this movie while I was watching it. And I take things and I'm like, okay, that's what's happening. And you can't do that with films. You know, I watch so much television. I watch so many movies. And if you fall too into something, if you really believe something, you should know that you're going to get flipped. And I am a casualty of that world.
Well, that's a really nice way to watch.
Yeah. Wonderful journey. I'm jealous. And I want to speak to what you said about how, you know, the underlying themes of how her dealing with this, the death of the end, her being the one to survive it, and how they dealt with the sorrows of the families and of her family in particular. Those themes carried this movie for me. Mm-hmm. That's what swept me away. That's what to me was absolutely amazing, was all of this, as much as it was a love story, they did add so many layers of what happens after, what happens during, how their thoughts are with each other. And I felt like they really addressed a lot of concerns and didn't make it all one note. Like the fact that she had a very different perspective on her life than he did, and that they made like these two people with opposite points of views crash into each other was so much fun. And like
in their meet cute.
Yeah.
In their meet cute.
But they had such high stakes, like him with his metaphors and with his like, I'm going to basically live on the edge, and her with like kind of being more hesitant, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm, making people such high stakes then be together.
And it's not just those two characters, it was also their friend Isaac,
yeah,
who I loved how they had a third person dealing with the type of same situation and going through a hard time himself, because we had Hazel, she's one extreme, and then we had Augustus, who's another, and then we had Isaac, who's like that calm in between, because we saw Isaac's downfall and mm-hmm, how he handled the situation, the current things that what they had looking forward to, and not really looking forward to, I shouldn't say that, but those are the expectations that are inevitable for their characters. But having Isaac show the anger and also dealing with it with comedy in humor into itself, you know, just having him, you know, face those situations, the nice in between.
Mm-hmm. I had one problem with the movie, and it was Isaac. So I had I had a little bit of an issue with him.
The
concept of him was great. It was necessary. The movie could not have progressed without him. And by the end, I did learn to like him a lot. But I just thought that he was, how do you say it? Nat Wolf is the actor's name.
Yeah,
Nate Berkus.
Nat Wolf.
Wait, what?
Sorry about the actors.
The actor.
Yeah. Wow.
He,
never mind.
He just didn't do it for me. He kind of bothered me, and I didn't believe his friendship with Gus. I was like, Gus, what is he doing for you? He was kind of negative about a lot of things. And with the breaking of the trophies, all these things, I thought that the character was awesome. The actor didn't do it for me. And finally, at the end, when we see him sitting down, and after his friend's already died and he's sitting and they're having this conversation, I was like, oh, okay, he's earned his place now, and I get it. But for 90% of the movie, I was like, God, I don't know. And knowing that he was almost cast as Gus or was in the running for it, I was like, what? Like, I cannot see that at all.
I can't see
so
that.
So I was very grateful that didn't happen, but I don't know. He just didn't do it for me.
I had no problems with him. I thought he was great.
Do you think he lived up to the character in the book?
Yeah, I did. Hmm. I liked how like cheerful he was. Like, I'm got a glass eye, I'm going to get another. Don't worry.
For me, it was like I didn't love him, and he didn't bother me. But I very much throughout the movie saw him for being the comic relief.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, he's here. We're going to laugh at something. What is it going to be this time? And like, that was fine, because I thought a lot of stuff was funny. But it is one of those characters that I more of remember, like when I'm a visual thinker, when I think about it, I think about the scenes of him breaking trophies or throwing eggs, mm-hmm, or, and it's the action that's bringing me back to that memory versus the character. Versus like if I'm going to think back on Hazel, it comes from kind of like the quieter moments,
mm-hmm,
like, or
because she killed it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's the difference. And I think that it was a necessary character, and it did add to the movie. And I thought the things he did were funny.
And you know what? So I worried that were he to stand out more, it would be like that funny movie with the couple and their best friend. And mm-hmm, it like would distract from like the love story.
I didn't want him to stand out more. I wanted him to be more realistic because I felt like everything else was so relatable and honest and truthful, and I felt like he was acting. And it was like, I'm doing this because it is funny. And it just partially bothered me. By no means was he with the worst selection for this role. He did a mediocre job, but he was surrounded by people that I thought were such stars that it really stood out that he was a fault in these stars.
No, I would disagree with that because I think he did have a lot of realistic moments. Him knowing that he has this, he's already partially blind, and knowing he's going to be fully blind, and yes, he's going to have those angry moments, and we saw that. I think a normal person might react like that and want to break things and break any trivial things, even if they are trophies. I felt like he conveyed the real emotions that some people might actually feel if they go through those situations. And I thought that was realistic to his character and what he brought to the screen.
I don't think it's as much... I'm speaking for you and I might be speaking wrongly. I don't think it's the act of him throwing a trophy against the wall that seemed unrealistic.
No, that's
I think
script.
It's how he threw the trophy against exactly. the wall. It's like, oh, I'm going to break this thing by like throwing my hand down like so hard it shatters. Or it's like when you know all you need to do to express anger and throwing the egg is like it's a flick of the wrist versus like the full arm extension. It's almost like overacting. That's a bad example, but
I didn't mind that he broke the trophy. I didn't mind any of the action. I thought this script was incredible. I thought that the direction was incredible. I thought that his performance wasn't. And so it wasn't the fact that he was doing all of these things. It was how he was doing them, like you're saying, that just to me was subpar. You know, I'm not sitting here saying he ruined the movie for me. I started by saying this is one of the best movies. I loved this movie, but he didn't live up to the other performances for me.
Okay, yeah. Well, we're talking about the cast and the acting, and we'll get into Shailene Woodley. I think she's a big part, obviously.
I think so.
So we're going to spend a lot of time on her. But I want to talk about the other characters as well. Her parents. I mean, Laura Dern, Sam
Props
Crammell.
To Laura Dern. So
I mean,
good.
What did you think of their performances as parents who might be going through this situation?
Spot on. I thought that both of them did an amazing job. I was so nervous that at some point we were going to see the dad like really try to drive Gus away, like stay away from my daughter type of thing, and them not support the way that she wanted to go to Amsterdam, all these things. I thought that these were exactly the kind of parents that any kid would really be lucky to have in a situation like that. And we don't usually see that on film. You know, usually we see the parents and it's like... And they did have some flaws. They did. But I thought that they were awesome.
I think that their flaws like existed in a very realistic way. Like, it was like when there should be doubt, there was doubt. Like, with the first chance of her going to Amsterdam, that the first realization is we can't afford to go to Amsterdam is such a real thing. Mm-hmm. That it's not absolutely no, absolutely yes. It's that,
And I want to give this to you, but I can't. Mm-hmm. That's a foreign country, and you're 16.
And I'm sorry, is what you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved how the parents were very supportive. And I'm not disappointed that they were, and that's great. We had those strong characters. But I was also surprised that we didn't see, like, any anger or doubt within the characters or the parents against each other. Because maybe I'm from another book, if you've ever read My Sister's Keeper, you can see the relationship and from the parents whose daughter's going through a mental condition. They're kind of driving, going apart and falling apart in that way.
Because that's all the time.
The daughter's, you know, condition is affecting the parents in their relationship. So I was surprised how this condition didn't really affect theirs.
Yeah.
And in fact, it made it stronger in a way.
Yeah, I love that they loved each other and it was... Yeah, what'd you say? Like, they're staying together and not because just for the daughter, because they want to.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I think that this was a different perspective. I think that would have been a whole different movie. And I'm glad that we didn't go down that path. And later on, I would like to talk about the scene, but I'm just going to mention it now. The scene that we see when the parents talk about what they actually are going to do. You know, Hazel Grace is walking out of the house and they stop her. And then they talk about how she's been training to be a counselor and all of that stuff. That, to me, showed that these parents do have a life beyond her. They have had discussions. They've probably had arguments. They don't necessarily agree on everything, but that's a different movie, and we're not going to show you that whole thing now, but just so you know, these are people who exist and are living in this world.
Yeah, and there's more stories going on than just...
Right, we can't tell every story right now, but there is another story.
And I thought Laura Dern's moment at, like, the coffee table after, like, the kids had, like, hooked up that night, and they were like, can we have... We just walked around, and she said, oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I know, let's not talk about it. It kind of bothers me, but let's not talk about it.
I know what you did.
Yeah, okay. That like was a beautiful moment.
Absolutely.
But again, it's great to have supporting parents, because if we did have another side story that was also angry, that would have brought everything down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to say that Laura Dern is becoming like the book mom queen. They're adapting Wild, and she's playing the mom in that as well.
Yeah. There you go. She's amazing. I mean, with it runs in her blood. You know, I think that Bruce Dern is probably one of the most talented actors there is out there. You know, it just like, feeds from the top.
He's amazing.
Yeah, when we covered Nebraska here, I like melted over him. You know, he's unbelievable. I just think like it runs in, she's been doing it forever and she kills it.
Yeah. Now another character I want to talk about, Willem Dafoe, who played the well-known author Van Houten. What did we think of his character? Was he portrayed as the, and I'm sorry, I'm going to curse it, as the asshole in the book? Like it was on screen?
Yeah,
he
was fairly spot on the way his like portrayal and casting. And I think that was kind of my little issue with the casting of him, was that it was a little bit too like on the nose. You know, he's a little bit too like almost evil, like winding his mustache, like, haha, like Captain Hook. And I thought it was just like too much. And I could, I thought it didn't support the movie as well.
I see what you're saying. I'm really interested to know, because I have my own thoughts that I like can share in a second, but I'm really interested to know what Sarah was thinking, because every time he came on screen, Sarah laughed for like a brief second. She
really
giggled. And so, yeah, I went and saw the movie with Sarah, and every time he showed up, she was like, and I've been dying to ask you this. What's up?
That's funny, because I did that totally subconsciously. I did not know I was doing that. I could see why I did, because... So he came on, and yes, I probably laughed the first time because I did not know he was in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Me and neither. I love him.
Oh.
Let me put this out there. Like, he, I don't know why, he has one of the most just, like, intriguing faces I've seen. Like, where, like, he's on screen, and I just get so, like,
enamored. Yeah.
Yeah.
This was the first time we've seen his face with stubble, you know?
It was different. I was like... This is not the movie I was thinking you were going to be in.
Every time. Like,
I was like, who are you? So I think probably a lot of it was like shock and curiosity. And his role was one of the more extreme, like choice-wise.
Yeah.
I think in this. I think Augustus Waters also like had some very strong choices there about how he perceived the world. But... yeah, I also didn't know if he was even going to exist. I didn't know if that was just like a not, like, I thought it was just going to be like a secretary or something. I didn't know his actual characters. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this comes from surprise. And I think that his whole character took me on a really big loop in this story because I wasn't expecting him. I know him as an actor. I also knew that there was more to this storyline than I thought there was because I really did think it was a trip that they were going to go, and then they were going to have a beautiful vacation, and it wasn't going to be as much about finding this author, and it really was just going to be focused on them. And I didn't, so when he really entered, was a real person and was a talented actor, I was like, oh, there is a lot more to this. I have not been like paying as cued into this attention
to this character or to this movie, like with him,
to this character, to that area of the story.
Yeah. Oh, you just didn't realize it was going to be that big of a part of the story.
Yes.
Because I'm agreeing with you a little bit. I thought that maybe it was, he didn't exist anymore. There was just a secretary who was responding. Mm-hmm. But to Jeff's point, I think that once he was cast, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. But I think, so I don't think you had an issue with the actor. I think you had an issue with him as the being cast.
Yeah, it was casting.
Right.
Just a little, maybe like the cliche choice.
Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But he was cast for that reason. So he delivered exactly what he was supposed to, but you wish they had gone with somebody a little different.
Less predictable.
Yeah, when I see him, he's such like a typecast as actor because like the shape of his face and like the inlay of his eyes and his voice. And he can't help that. But when you see him, like certain emotions register. And I you just like get that.
He's automatically very layered. That's why he is in film, because he's so layered. And I was not expecting that from like, I wasn't expecting them to find this author. I didn't know that was going to happen. And then they introduced an actor who does bring so much presence. So I was a little taken back. Yeah.
For me, the character,
but in a good way.
The character was a very tough pill to swallow. Again, in a good way. I wasn't disappointed with it, but there was so much to him that I hated. And, like, you know, some people, they just seem wise, so you want to listen to their advice. And he was one of those people, you know, you want. And the advice he was getting, the things he said, I was like, F you, man. You know, like, and I felt very similar to how the kids felt about him.
And that particular scene, I had a hard time watching, because it's always sad when you have this idol that you look up to and want it. You have this pre-envisioned thought in your head that, like, this is the greatest person alive. And then that sad realization when you actually meet them, they don't live up to your expectations. And then that, I thought that was realistic, and because some of us do experience that. And when you meet your, you know, your hero in a way, in this case is Hazel.
Yeah.
And then just his advice, which is very cynical, very angry. I'm like, what has happened in your life to make you this way? Mm-hmm. And why are you treating it to this type of person who's obviously vulnerable? I mean, you shouldn't even be, shouldn't treat anyone like that, really. But what made you become so angry? What, you know, like, I love how he had his scene at the end where he justified, and then not really giving him an excuse why he was the way he was, but he was also affected by someone who had cancer too. So just bringing bringing everything back to that.
One thing that I liked about them casting such a strong character with him is what it gave Shailene to work with.
Yeah.
Because every time she stood up to him, I believed it. And I think he, as an actor and as that character, is a person who's very hard to stand up to. And to have, like, regain, like, the power from.
Yeah.
And she showed him what was what. She won her argument twice with him. And that, to me, showed a lot. Like, if he was some, like, kind of wussier or, like, just depressed man and didn't have that, like, angry chip on his shoulder, then her telling him to know F off both times, both at his house and in the car, wouldn't be as impressive. But she tells someone who's scary those things, and truth. So I liked that.
She didn't seem to have much fear, because what is there to be afraid of when when you're her, you know?
True. When you're facing death.
Yeah.
And when you're 16, your, like, infatuations with your idols are so strong.
Yeah.
And that she'd already lost that at that point. So, like, yeah, nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what Van Houten was questioning. Okay. Why are you so into this book?
Yeah.
Because it reflected her life.
Yeah.
And she got lots of monologues. And they all were pretty good.
Douche pants.
I'm going to use that all the time now.
Yeah. Douche pants. Where did that come from?
And I actually liked his secretary, too. She wasn't a huge role, but I liked that she added. I thought that she... I was confused with why she stayed with him. But when she runs after them and offers to take them, which, of course, we'll talk about, Anne Frank's house, I thought that was a strong moment.
All right, so what do we think of Ansel Elgort? I mean, he's a big up-and-coming actor, too.
Oh, yeah.
So what did we think of his portrayal of Augustus? Do we believe this type of character in this, his type of, you know, situation with his progressive cancer?
I thought it was a role written for him. I thought he did an amazing job. Yes, I do.
Yeah, I thought he was very good. I thought he was kind of like boyish and immature and kind of like a perfect way for like an 18-year-old with cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like when he was
a
coming
little smug.
Yeah. And he was like giving these like cliche lines to Shailene Woodley's character, and I was like, this is like almost laughable, but hasn't been in a relationship before. In the book he has, but you know, like, he's never been like one true love like this.
Wait, go back and say what you act like. So in the book, what happened?
In the book, he was actually, I think during when he was had cancer the first time, he was dating a girl, maybe Caroline or Catherine, another girl, and she got cancer, and at some point towards the end, it was like starting to eat away at her brain, and she became like some massive bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he stuck with her, even though it was like the cancer doing that, and he didn't enjoy it.
Okay,
they like became friends on the cancer,
but they weren't in love.
They were
in love.
They dated for a while. It wasn't it's clear it wasn't this strong, but it was like a real relationship for him at that time.
Oh, interesting.
And now knowing that, I'm glad that they kept his ex-girlfriend out of this story, because that would have made for a whole different film too.
Yeah, I think it would have been just too confusing for like an hour and a half movie.
But yeah, and to add on the explanation of what happened to her and make it, I think that was a smart directorial choice.
Yeah, it's almost easier to conceive like the story when it's like they're each firsts.
Right.
I think an interesting fact with the book, Augustus is actually 17, correct?
Oh, I don't know. Remember that.
I believe someone told me he was 17, but in the film they made him 18, and I think the only reason why is because his character can buy cigarettes and you have to be 18 to buy tobacco. Tobacco products. So that's like one of the changes they made. Oh,
interesting. That is interesting. I thought that, just like you're saying, this boyish immaturity to him, it reminded me of when I was in high school, like what I thought was sexy and who I thought was hot. You know, the guy, if there was a guy who put cigarette in his mouth and didn't light, even if he did light, didn't light it, I'd be like, what? Like, what are you trying to prove? But I love that. You put the thing that does the killing right between your teeth, but you never give it the actual power to kill you. That metaphorically worked so well throughout this entire movie and I could see my younger self like totally falling in love with somebody after that one line like that. Mm-hmm. And now I think, oh no, what? Not that I'm all mature and stuff. I'm not. I'm still a little kid. But that for me was really huge, and it carried throughout the entire film. And that's why I thought he was so perfect for this. Everything he said, I believed. Even the things that I didn't believe, it's because he didn't want me to believe them.
I agree. I think that he was a master of the one lines in this film. He had so many good ones, and to make them all work, I was like, bravo. I think that, I don't remember which one of you said he was like, this part was written for him, but I agree. I think he did a good job, and I have seen him in Divergent, but this made him pop.
Right.
This makes me, like, Divergent didn't make me excited to see him in this. This is making me excited to see him in the next Divergent.
Has anybody seen him in an interview? Is this kind of like the character he is in real life? How similar is he?
You know what? He seems like a very well-spoken, personable guy, and who does have humor. He himself says that he's not a big book reader either, but he read Fault in Our Stars for this film, and he enjoyed it.
Yeah, okay. He does seem very similar to this. I've seen some interviews with him. He swears a lot. He jokes around a lot. There was this one interview, he's eating a bunch of cookies. He was asked if he was crying during his thought. He's like, oh yeah, big time, cried a lot. Like, he seemed very down to earth, very cool, felt very blessed to be living the life he was living.
It's very nice.
He's clearly, he's new, so he hasn't had time to be fully jaded, so who knows what he'll be like in 10 years. But as of now, he seemed pretty kick butt. We know that he's coming up in that new movie, Men, Women, and Children, Jason Reitman, and it's Adam Sandler and Emma Thompson starring in it, and he's supposed to be like this. It's supposed to be his huge breakout. I mean, I thought this was a huge breakout, but he's supposed to be incredible in it.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with this being its huge breakout. Being you know,
definitely
making a lot of money, got lots of attention, and he's starring in it.
Sorry, I tuned out after the Adam Sandler Emma Thompson together in a movie. That's happening.
Yeah,
I have to go. So thank you.
Definitely a big breakout for his career and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But another person, of course, Shailene Woodley. I mean, she's already had her breakout, but she just keeps rising to the top.
Yeah.
She was great in this film.
And I was reading before that she had read the book a couple times. She loved it. She loved the character. And so when this was presented to her, I think the audition, she just like freaked out and she said, I have to be it.
Yeah.
And I saw that passion in her on screen. I saw that she like wanted, she owed it to like the book and the character, and she wanted to give it everything. And I thought it was like a beautiful performance.
Yeah, I agree. I thought she did an unbelievable job. There was something about her smile and her laugh. And as an actress, I go into and I'm picturing her reading her sides in the way that I would have interpreted them. And I don't think that I would have seen the smiles when she saw them. And I really appreciated the moments she picked to enjoy life and just like show something that I don't know if I would have seen in those words.
Totally.
So I thought that it was such a strong performance, because it was different and not what all talented actresses would have given us. It was different and I really brave and strong.
Yeah, and I have to say I loved That's not true. I did not love the original scene with Augustus and Hazel when they bumped into each other. And then after outside, they're talking and he's like, what's your name? No, what's your full name, Hazel? Oh, Hazel Grace Lancaster. I thought he was that, like, I don't know if there's a script or like his portrayal of that, like, immature guy with like chummy, and that she was just like giggling and thought it was like so cute, and she was like almost rolling her eyes at it. Like, I thought that just like sold the whole thing for me because she was like in on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, if we're rolling our eyes, like, that's bad, but if like we're watching them do it, like, it's fine.
And she's like, you were doing such a good job, like, yeah, talking, you know, exactly what I was thinking, like, oh, you were doing well, buddy, why'd you blow it? And then she says it, it was spot on. Yeah,
I agree. I think that she did a wonderful balance of like adding in humor, adding in when she was like embarrassed, or adding in when she was sad, or adding, like, she, it was not, everything had to be packed full of drama, and I was glad about that. I'm glad it didn't turn into, you know, soap opera or anything. It wasn't, yeah, like she was upset all the time. Adding in those moments of being happy, of finding those like lighthearted, like, because there's like, yeah, that deep love, but there's also like lighthearted love. So I thought she did a wonderful job.
I mean, Shailene, she's a great actress. If you ever watched The Descendants, watch that too, because that was probably the film I watched that I was like, wow, this girl has an amazing career ahead, yeah, of her. I can't wait to see her next projects upcoming.
You know, I watched that and I said, oh, she's fine.
That's exactly how I thought. I was like, okay,
I thought she did great in that film, which made me excited for all of the other things that she's in. The parts where I thought she did amazing was when going up the Anne Frank scenes, or the,
oh god,
the scenes where she's like really struggling with, yeah, her condition.
I can't wait to talk about
that. And you know, her just breathing through the oxygen tubes, you can really feel for her in that, like, we're holding and gasping for her, and that she can't breathe, we can't breathe, we're holding on for her. And I thought that was so well executed on her part.
Yeah.
And then there were other moments where Shailene actually said herself that people in those conditions, you have to breathe through oxygen tubes. When they're like arguing or they're really angry and they're yelling at they wouldn't, you know, say as much so fast in a fast amount of time, because they'd have to stop to take breaths. They would get more winded than what she would be during acting. So she had to stop a lot to remind herself, hey, you have to breathe, because a person in this condition has to stop and breathe, because
absolutely
they, wow, don't allow that.
Even in scenes that it wasn't mentioned that she was having trouble breathing, I could see how heavy her chest was, which makes me know, you know when you can tell somebody's not actually cold and you see that it's supposed to be a cold climate, and I could tell she was actually struggling the whole time, even if it wasn't mentioned. I thought she was amazing. And going back to what Jeff said about her really wanting this part, so it says that she wrote a million letters to John Green and to Josh Boone over and over, and she said, quote, if I'm passionate about something, I'll do everything I can to be a part of it. So I think that that's just like, you know, people think there are so many rules in this industry that you go into the room, you audition, you wait to hear. Like, there really, in life, there are very few rules that you can't break, that you can't figure out. And she wanted this project, and she went out there and she effing got it. And, like, that is something to be respected. And she got it, and then she didn't just do it. She killed it because she knew it was for her.
Yeah.
Which I really admire.
She just had such, like, nice, quiet moments, too. You know, like, you, like, learn to deliver lines in the class, but, like, they teach you about, like, when you're not talking, you still gotta be on camera. And, like, when he's like, by the way, I'm sick again, and, like, her face didn't even, like, move, but you just, like, saw it register. And she, like, closed her eyes because she was like, I don't want, like, you to process what I'm saying. I thought it was, like, wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Even when we don't see them together, when they have the phone calls back and forth, and we're seeing them talk on the phone for whatever, and just the way her facial expressions go, and when she's finally telling him, like, I don't want this life, or what, everything about her. I thought that the two of them really did an amazing job.
Yeah, especially there was the one conversation where, you know, she's trying to avoid Augustus, and he keeps calling her. And then when she finally answers, going back to the quiet moment, she took a long time because he asked, are you okay? And then there was, like, 5 seconds of pause, which in film, that's a lot.
A lot, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And 5 seconds before she said no.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that was just brilliant. That simple moment was brilliant.
Right. And even in the writing of that, you know, how often in life when somebody says, how are you? Are you okay? Do you actually turn and you say no? So I thought that it deserved those 5 seconds, because to think about all the things going through your head, do I say yeah? Do I say no? How am I actually, you know what? No, I'm not okay. And it really, it deserved that time.
And I thought she was really benefited by, like, some of the script I was saying I didn't love before, but then other parts of the script were just beautiful. Like, they didn't, it wasn't overwritten. Like, the scene comes in when, after Augustus passes, and the lights turn on, and she just knows. And we know that she knows. And then there are a couple scenes like that, too, in, like, the waiting rooms and stuff, mm-hmm. where they didn't need to, like, say what was going on, and we got it.
Absolutely. Or, for another one of those for me, was the scene when the dad sat down to Gus and was like, just so you know, she can't really quite keep... And it wasn't a blown-out conversation, because then she walked in and was, like, ready to go.
Yeah.
I didn't need to hear him talk to him for 45 minutes. I got... the idea of the over a little mm-hmm. bit overbearing, a little bit nerve, you know, trying to be protective. It was enough.
I see. I really liked the script. I think overall, like, the dialogue felt very natural. And that was the thing I liked most in something that I think could have turned very cheesy, was that even in the cheesy moments, it felt like it was being, like, natural, like, honest to the age, honest to the condition. I was just like, oh, this is simple dialogue. Like, I feel like almost they could have just actually said this as people. Like, nothing felt too contrived, mm-hmm. in my opinion. But I was curious on what you didn't like.
I thought, well, I mean, I don't remember exact moments right now, but, like, I guess, like, that opening scene when they bumped into each other, mm-hmm. and then it was like, I gotta go to, like, the bathroom to fix my hair. I, like, needed a little bit of something more to, like, spark her, like, wanting to change her appearance for this guy. But I don't know, maybe, like, do you see, I don't know, give me, like, the female perspective. Do you see, like, one hot guy and you, like, make sure you look okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there's that.
Yeah. No, but I get what you're saying, because it was, like, she seemed to have zero interest and then she went. So I do see what you're saying. But, like, I don't know. There's something about, even when I'm at my worst, even when I'm at my sick, whatever, there's something about seeing a cute guy and just, like, wanting to put lip gloss on, or, okay. like, wanting to just, like, fix one thing about yourself, and then going and looking at myself, and I felt like she did this, and being like, well, I'm completely SOL anyway right now. There's nothing I can do, so I'm just going to go back out there. Like,
I don't know what SOL means.
Shit out of luck.
Yeah.
Ah, there we go.
I'm shit out of luck. Shit so, out like... Luck. I just felt like that was, like, such a moment for her. She's like, oh, let me go try to fix this. She, like, goes like this and is like, nope, not fixing anything here. Well, went back out.
Even those moments, because we saw in the beginning, very beginning, before she even met Augustus, she looked at herself in the mirror and she wasn't happy.
Yeah.
And then she met Augustus and then he's saying, you're beautiful. She's looking at herself again in the mirror and she's like,
what?
Yeah, you know, I am kind of cute. And then, you know, when they go to Amsterdam and her mother gives her a dress. And then, you know, so, like, she's having that more self-awareness of, you know, she really is beautiful and she... And someone else is acknowledging that, too. So, and she put on that beautiful blue dress.
Yeah.
For him.
And I have to say, like, I don't know if you guys noticed, but, like, that shade of blue is the exact shade of the cover of the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought that was, like, such a nice, like, homage to, like, just the book in general.
Yeah. And the dress was beautiful.
Yeah.
And even that, when the mom does give the dress to her, and she's like, oh, Mom, you're telling me you want me to go out on the town with a hot guy in a city that's dangerous? And she's like, yep, that is what I'm saying. And I was like, see... That's a mom who's not reckless, but not overprotective. Like, she's got it. She's got it in the bag. That's kicked butt.
Let her live her
life.
And is
looking
she's
at the whole situation.
So, the whole thing. And even though there are moments where the mom was like, oh, when we come back here, and we all very well know they're never going back, and they're never going to make it back there, and she gets mad, and mom's like, well, I'm trying to stay positive. I thought she was positive in the right moments, and in other moments knew when to let
give
go
some
a little bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree. That was a beautiful moment on everybody's part. You know, I want to talk about a little bit of the directing and cinematography. Mm-hmm. For a very emotional film, John Green, you know, who wrote the book, he said he was happy that it remained to the pain and emotion of the book. And cinematography, I thought, for being a sad story, it was very bright and colorful, which I thought was a bit surprising.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think it was because, like, the intention of John Green and, like, the storytellers was to show the humanity of these characters. And, like, that doesn't equate to, like, black and white.
Yeah. I thought the juxtaposition of those things, the absolute saddest story that you could have with this bright, crazy world, really worked. I wasn't surprised by it. I was pleasantly pleased by saying, but yeah, mm-hmm. I just liked it. I thought that it looked nice, and it made it all the better when we finally, you know, these characters between Hazel and Gus smiling and smiling and laughing it off and brushing it off, and when we finally see that scene and it's nighttime and he's at the gas station and it's not as bright and it's not as cheerful and he is a mess, an completely broken down mess.
Yeah.
I was like, this is what we've been working for, you know? And she says, I wish that I could say that he stayed completely himself till the end. I wish that there was no flaw here, but this happened, you know? And I thought that was very realistic, and it made me realize why everything else was always so, it was green and it was blue and it was bright, and now it's dark. And sometimes you have those dark moments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And going back to this question and your other one about my problems with the script, I hate to be this picky, but I really feel like the first, like, hour of the movie was a little bit too montage heavy for my sake, my taste.
But what does that have to do with the script? Because in the, like...
Because that's, like, written down in the script, just, like, the montages.
Oh, I thought you meant as opposed to the novel.
I meant, like the creation of the film.
Do you think that contributed to the editing part of montages, or was that in the book? Like, they did this and this and this, like...
No, I think that was, like, a choice by the screenwriter and, like, fulfilled by the editors and the directors.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like it was, like, a scene, and the montage of her, like, brushing her teeth and looking at her phone and eating and looking at her phone and, like, texting and looking at her phone. Well, duh. But you know what I'm saying.
And then a scene, the text and then a pop montage. Up on the screen?
Yeah. I just thought, I was like, okay, I don't want to see another montage. Then I got three more.
Did you mind the text on the screen? Is that what you were just following that up on?
Oh, you know what? No, you guys go. Please.
No, sorry. I didn't.
I hated the text on the screen. I just thought I know it was like the same font as the cover. Something about it was just cheesy, the execution of it. And I say that because the execution of the email on the screen, or is like the opaque white, was beautiful. And I was like, I want to recreate that in a film.
That's true. I didn't love it. It wouldn't have been my first choice, but what the saving grace was for me was I was just home visiting my 17-year-old sister, and that's about what these kids are, and I was like, this is totally the font she would have chose. This is exactly what a 17-year-old, 18-year-old's text message looks like. This is exactly what they want. You know, this is the thought process, the bubble, the way it goes. So for me, it was true to those characters as an art form, it was not aesthetically pleasing. I was like,
And compared with the email, which I thought.
Absolutely.
So who created this like beautiful email and this like text?
I also went back to, yes, they're using iPhones, which I feel, you know, phones and cars, they always make a movie dated. And the story could really apply to any period of time. And that when they go to the text messages and then having the cartoonish, childish feel to that, I felt that if had they done the regular iPhone font and look, it would have dated themselves.
Oh.
And if they gone with the cartoon, can kind of make it more broad over time.
I think that, like, for me, it was distracting. It was something that, like, each time it kind of happened for the text message, like, think bubbles, I was like, look to that side of screen. Like, it did pull me out a little.
Right. Yeah.
At the same time, it's hard to have a young relationship with showing
absolutely
depiction of text messages right now, because it just what relationships are. It was so much easier to illustrate a phone call because you hear it, and this, it's like you can only do so many off of reactions, like people then are curious about what it exactly says.
And it is adapted off of a young adult book, and that very fits in that family.
I agree, but you know, then you have lines like "the silence is deafening," and that is such a gorgeous, beautiful thing in this like bubbly little. And I'm like, okay, I get why you did this, and I don't actually have a better solution, so I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a home run for me. If there is a home run out there, then this was not that. Mm-hmm. I think that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't awful, but there might have been something else I could have done.
One thing I did like about production design or cinematography, however you want, is the, it deals with the brightness that they involved in the middle, but the focus on their set decoration being like the quotes on the walls and the Jesus carpet and all of these bubbly aspects of life, or like positive thinking things that are like in the back of your mind, but then are in a way done ridiculously, but also at the same time character driven by like smaller parts. I thought that was very interesting. So like how they use the crocheted Jesus carpet to be like the center of Jesus, and to be in support group, and to be kind of ridiculous, and to be, but also a component of the leader of that support group, who used it as his like way to you know, stays
into the hearts
stable.
Of others.
Yeah. I just the thought heart of Jesus.
Yeah. I thought little things like that added in little ideas, or like Augustus's parents who have all the quotes on the walls, mm-hmm. and then they tie that into Shailene's speech at the
And did you like all that stuff in the production?
I did, because I thought that it just kind of, it was other windows to other stories to me, which was, it was the same as her parents, how we kind of got that little aspect of they are doing other things. We got a little bit of his parents, that they're going through something. Mm-hmm. We got a little bit of the support group, the people in that are going through things.
Marissa's scowling behind you.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not scowling. I'm thinking of other objects that they also used in this film, the metaphors for the life. The playground, that swing set mm-hmm. That her parents still held on to over all these years. You can see it's broken down. It's beaten.
It's
Why
small.
Did they still have
Was it? Was
it
gone in the end?
Well, they actually filmed a scene where they're selling it on Craigslist, but that got cut. But that particular swing set, it shows that the parents are holding on to something for as long as they can, even though it's broken down. So the metaphor for, Hazel's character, and then also that playground that was the skeleton,
the bones, yeah.
bones, you know, playing with death.
Right. I thought everything about the background of this movie was so well thought out and awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, even when we're at the Anne Frank house and we see everything, I've been there. This was an incredibly moving scene for me, knowing all that stuff that was there. I thought that was gorgeous. The background of the playground, the background with the trophies and the smashing of the trophies, the little things like the Jesus carp, all of that for me made this so important, and everything, like, life is happening all around us, and we have to focus on what matters, which is us, you know, because it was hectic and it was crazy, and I just thought they did an amazing job tuning that out, no matter how loud it was, mm-hmm. and just being.
And
go ahead.
I was thinking too, like, about the set deck of her bedroom. Like, she spends so much time in there when she's sick, and it was like flawlessly decorated, like almost too much to like a good point, like with like the tree decals on the walls and the pictures and like the Christmas
stars,
lights.
The
stars, yeah. It's like, you're going to be spending a lot of time in here. Let's like deck it out. Mm-hmm. I felt that.
Exactly. And it's like, you feel that in each point, because it would have been so easy for them to decorate the houses just like, oh, you know, put your average Pottery Barn furniture, everything really plain, everything very generic, fill up some space. It's easy to do that. It's easy to put them just in a church with a normal carpet. It's those little pieces of effort that make you think just a little bit more.
And props to John Green, that's all taken from the book.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thinking about that.
Also Augustus's bedroom too. The complete distinctions between the two bedrooms, and like Augustus, he has the TV, his trophies, like all of his life is in that one room as well.
I was just going to go into their budget a little bit, because we're talking about all the sets and stuff that they had. So this is estimated to be $12 million, which I thought was great, because I think that that's exactly what it should have been. And I don't think with an extra million to whatever, it could have been a better movie. I thought that they took what they needed. And what do you guys think about that? They opening weekend, they made about $48 million, and overall, so opening weekend was the sixth, and as of the 11th, they made about $62 million.
Wow.
For opening, that's really well.
Yeah.
I think with a little more money, they could have had a better designer for the text decals on the bubbles, but besides that,
extra million dollars, figure out the text.
Just to do this one problem, we will give
you. They
probably
spent a lot of it in Amsterdam.
$1 million.
That's a shockingly small budget for a movie that was tracking to be like the biggest of the summer.
Right, but there was no. What did they need?
The thing that created is one, travel, and two, I know that they did film some at Anne Frank's house, but they also did make that set.
Right.
As well.
Yeah.
So
they
only
filmed the outside of the entrance of the house. They didn't go inside.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think budget probably went there into the recreation. Not that that's a ton of money, but
they went in, they saw what it was, and they literally recreated like pretty flawlessly the setup inside. But yeah, that would take money. Traveling there, filming in Pittsburgh also, not as opposed to filming here.
Did you see any budget of what the marketing was?
Mm-mm-mm.
Okay, because it's on every billboard, every wall, every fence post in the city.
Probably a lot more than
big
the film
promotions
budget.
For this
yeah,
film.
But it's like almost the same price.
I would guess it's more.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I'll look it up right now.
You awesome. Know what I found was interesting, though, was when I was out here, and not that people didn't know about this movie, but when I was out here talking to my friends, they were like, oh, yeah, I'm excited for that. When I went home to Boston, it was like every single person was going to the opening weekend of this frickin' movie. Like, everyone I spoke to was so excited about this. They had been waiting for this. They were like, because I don't know, sometimes out here I get confused of what the big movies are because every movie seems like a big movie and this person's going to this premiere and this person doing this. When I went home, this was like the talk of the summer.
You have to remember too that it spent like 2 years on the New York Times bestseller list for young adult books.
Right.
Yeah. And in fairness, we're out here in Hollywood, so we kind of have a biased opinion about that because, you know, we're already here in the industry. We know we're surrounded by this.
Right.
And people out there aren't. They're farther away. So when something as big as this film is, you know, they're going to jump at the opportunity to go see it.
Absolutely. And as an asterisk, I already mentioned that I was mostly hanging out with my 17-year-old sister and her friends. So that could be why everybody wanted to go see this movie. But they sent me Snapchats after of them all, like, hysterically crying. And they were like, is this the best movie we've ever seen in our entire lives?
Yes. My question to you, did any of you cry during watching this movie?
Sarah, like, had to keep making sure I was okay. She, like, kept looking over at me. I was like, okay.
Yeah, Sarah, did you cry? I was a little worried. I'm not a completely heartless human being, so I did tear up. Compared to the people that were, like, Roxy was not wailing. She was very gracefully tearing up.
There were wailing people.
There was literally wailing people at the end that I was laughing, because it was not like, wasn't like, or it was like
like that. Like crazy. Coming from behind. Words. I know that you went with a bunch of, like, 13-year-old girls, so.
I went by myself, but, like, I went to the Saturday 8 o'clock screening, surrounded by like every teenage girl. I had teenage girls on both sides of me, so the whole room was bawling uncontrollably.
Wow.
And like I kept it together. Unfortunately, had I watched this movie by myself, I would have completely lost it. But you know, I kept my composure. I knew what was gonna happen. And
you when
know,
would you have cried? Because like I the things that were getting me was like, it was a lot of, like, the family stuff.
Family, yeah.
That, absolutely.
Something about, like, the scene where she was like, I heard you say you aren't a mom anymore, and that discussion.
That's the one. And that scene literally leads up to the mock funeral of Augustus.
And the eulogy was the scene.
Everyone bawled their eyes out at.
I mean,
that was, like, the lead up.
I couldn't believe they went there. Like, it was a very eerie moment. And then especially the fact that she completely changed her speech for the dead and for the living. You got to say different things to different people.
And the fact that everybody at the funeral, the mock funeral, is dressed up like the cast of Rent. You know, I thought that added a really nice touch. Scarves, beanies, vests.
Minus the author who had come into town in the white. Like, here I am. Like, what?
What did we think of the mock funeral scene? Was that also in the book, I'm guessing? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought, I was like, where is she going with the numbers? I thought that speech was very original, as opposed to, like, if you're going to have a mock funeral, I don't want to hear Shailene Woodley say, listen, I loved you, I'm going to miss you, like, all those typical things, you know? That's not what I want to hear, the actress. I wanted to see her give her all. This was a shining moment for her, and for Hazel Grace as a character, and it was unique, and it was true to them, and I really appreciated it. And this was actually one of the moments that I liked Isaac, and I was like, okay, you did it here, kid. I thought that this was really smart that they added it in.
I agree. I think that... Ooh, I think on a deeper note, I think it's when it comes to eulogies and the actual writing of them, it's such a task, because it is, who are you addressing and who is the funeral for? And I thought how they approach the subject, because it's just a crazy circumstance that I don't even know how you would, like, how they came up with the words to write, because that's so hard. And I think that it was written really well.
Yeah.
And I think that it was heartfelt and unique, and it's like hard to talk about, because I'm like, oh my, I can't believe that happened.
And they did steal some of the words from what Van Houten did say to them in the place they went.
Right.
Yeah.
What's it called? Amsterdam. Amsterdam. Thank you. So I thought that was like a nice like throwback to that, and like the inspiration, like it all came full circle.
This like, author that we used really to like.
Yeah. And how like we'll use that to like inspire like something good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the actual screenwriters for this film, Scott Neustadter and Michael Weber, they said when they were writing this film that their goal was to keep several key scenes from the book, and this was one of those key scenes that they had to get down.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines from the book was not even touched. I don't know how they would have, because it was like her narrating, but it was during the sex scene. I'll get to it, but were you guys surprised that, like, how far it went? I was surprised that she took off her shirt, and they, like, it wasn't, like, it was not, like, maybe they had sex. It was like, no, they had sex.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mean you were surprised with the fact that they had sex, adult. Or you were surprised you were surprised at how it was shown? How on it was screen. Shown.
Like, usually it's a lot, like, more delicate. Like, they probably had sex, but, like, if you're young, you don't know what they're doing. Like, I thought it was, like, very apparent.
I mean, I wasn't taken aback by it. I mean, I've seen a lot of kids' television shows where girls, you can see, like, the full back of woman, and that doesn't really faze me in that way. Maybe it doesn't faze teenagers. I think teenagers today are conditioned to see a little bit more risque scenes. Mm-hmm. And also, this their love-making scene was filmed after they had just cursed out their favorite author.
Yeah.
So, like, we've already had...
And their first kiss that morning.
Yeah, and, like, they've already had the F-bomb and, like, all these cursing and kissing and stuff. It just elevated to that point where I wasn't surprised.
Oh, interesting.
I thought it was beautifully done. And it was something that I think to myself, if I was babysitting somebody younger, would I be embarrassed to take them to this? And I wouldn't have. So I thought that it was very tactful. I thought that it was pretty... it couldn't have gone any farther without being an R-rated movie, but
yeah.
I thought that it was... really nice.
I mean, I thought it was, like, a beautiful moment for them as actors, and then I love, like, the navigating of the shirt and, like, the oxygen
and getting
cord.
Stuck, and it's awkward, yeah. And it's weird. Yeah. And
I liked the awkward bit. I liked that they threw that in.
I loved it.
Especially because when you do look on the bigger picture of they just had their first kiss this morning, and you're already here.
Yeah.
I liked that it was awkward, I think. And they didn't show too much for me, and so
I also love the give and take of them, where, like, he had his, like, hands on her chest while she's wearing the bra, and then she's the one that took her bra off.
Yeah, me too.
Like, it was, like, each of them were taking a step up together, not, like, we're doing this.
Yeah, him warning about the leg and her saying, get over yourself.
Yeah.
Like,
So in the book, the line is, he took off his pants and then his leg.
Yeah.
I was like, I love this.
I love levity between scenes like this too. Mm-hmm. I mean, this film does so well balancing humor and comedy and drama and those quiet moments. It was like so many emotional upheavals that they executed so well.
Yeah, I laughed out loud the first half of the movie like a good half dozen times. You know, I really did. And Sarah would kind of look at me like, what is she even laughing at? There was just like slight looks or moments that I was like, that's good.
I thought they had really nice light moments for such, like, a heavy film, but I did not find myself laughing out loud.
Really?
Yeah, I was, like, smiling and, like, was, like, cheered by it, but not laughing.
But would you have liked to have been, or that was good for you that you weren't?
Maybe, like, two or three more moments of laughing out loud, but I thought it was a nice, like, amount.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. I want to go back to talking about the Anne Frank scene.
Yeah, thank you.
In Anne Frank's house, when they're going up and, like, you can literally see their relationship building as they're going higher and transcending, you know, that the whole metaphor and that aspect, and then leading up to the point where they actually kiss, and it's such an iconic place, and then the people with them on that tour guide applauding. Did that bother you?
Because there's a lot of controversy about
there actually
about the
is,
clapping
about this particular scene and house. It taking place in Anne Frank's house. Did this bother you in any way?
Here are my thoughts. It was definitely off-putting for a second. And I'm not saying it bothered me. I think it was the right way to go about it. But I was like, wait, I'm sorry. Why? Everybody's clapping. First of all, being a Jew and being somebody who's been there before, I'm feeling a lot of different emotions. And I've studied a lot about Anne Frank. And in very strange ways, Hazel Grace and Anne Frank have a lot of similar qualities. So I thought that this was an incredible parallel, and the way that was written, and that this is where they go and that's where they end up. You know, they just so happened to be in Amsterdam, and then that's what it just was very strong for
me. I agree. And I'm also Jewish. I've studied Anne Frank, obviously. I don't want to, like, be, like, re into things, but she would have, like, the girl she was would have loved this. Oh, and like yeah. she would, I feel like she's like in heaven, like applauding in this.
Absolutely. You know?
And they're overlapping it with her dialogue. So like there's a quote by her being talked about while they're climbing the stairs, while they're kissing. And it was almost like, no, like we know that this is a big deal. And we're like, we know.
This, yeah, to me, it was so not a disrespectful move.
No, not at all.
They weren't like, we want to kiss right now, and we don't care where we are. We're going to do it anyway. It was, we want to kiss because of where we are.
And because we're so in love. It wasn't like, let's go make out at that girl's house. Yeah. You know, it was like, no, like, it just happened and spontaneous.
The off-putting part for me was the clapping, which, I don't even know if I didn't like it. It just, it was startling for sure. Because I can't imagine being in that room where you are so claustrophobic and you're stuck and you have all these emotions and you're looking at the and all these things and kissing somebody and having that intimate moment.
Yeah.
And then the entire room clapping. I'm not even saying that that's unrealistic because that's not what it felt like to me. It was just like, oh.
I think I would have preferred like this beautiful moment. They're making out and then they pan out. Everyone's like.
Like looking at them.
Okay. Yeah. Like a little bit giggly, a little bit uncomfortable because of the location. But like, you know what? Kids these days, they look like they're in love. Mm-hmm. Good for them.
Absolutely. I think that's what I would have preferred. What happened in the book?
Okay. What happened in the book was exactly what this was. However, it was so apparent for me reading it that they're climbing the stairs and her breathing's getting heavier. I 100% thought she was going to die. And I said, this is so messed up with the F word. This is so effed up that she's going to die in the Anne Frank house. Yeah. And she's like 16. I said, I this is horrible. And then she didn't. And then that feeling of dread was like pushed down by the kiss. And I was like, wow, okay. Like, there's the love story that we're waiting for. So it was very similar.
Okay, because I know a lot of critics, the entertainment critics, are upset with the fact that they're comparing the her cancer condition with the Holocaust.
That's
and
not
having
that. Happen, though.
No, but people are saying you know, that, yeah. are making that comparison between, like, are the two even equal in that way?
That's why I spoke very carefully in saying that the two women have similar characteristics. I'm not saying the two scenarios.
Qualities.
There is no comparison. Not that there's zero comparisons to be made, but there. I don't think anybody intentionally is saying that having cancer as a kid is like going through the Holocaust. That is so not the statement being made. That this is what bothers me about critics when they look into things to the point where they poke holes for the sake of being like, oh, this is what this person is trying to say. You know what? No, it's not. And I'm not the writer, I'm not the director, I'm not any of these people, and I can say for a fact that is not what they're saying.
Yeah, I didn't think that either when I first watched that film, and then I read critics were saying that. I didn't think that at all. I could understand that maybe any comparison that they're trying to thread these two together was that they both suffered. They were both teenage girls who have suffered. One was during the Holocaust, one is now.
And try to have a positive outlook.
But it's just the metaphor for suffering and being at the Anne Frank's house. And even that house is a character in itself. What the parish and the suffering that went through. So I think that's where people are taking that stab at.
Right.
I mean, I will approach this from like, I've never been to Anne Frank's house. I know a little bit about her. I did not take this was this huge, giant comparison. I do not think that, as you said, it was meant to be offensive in any way or send across a message about cancer and the Holocaust. Just from viewing the scene, it was a little bit awkward for me, especially the clapping. I also think that they held it too long. I think the shot was given too much time, personally. I felt like we were lingering there for a really long time because I remember actually being like, I had enough time to process like, okay, when are they going to stop making out in Anne Frank's house? What are these people going to do? Right. And I was like, oh, and now they're clapping. Oh, and now they're still clapping.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it wasn't, I didn't have a problem with this scene, how it happened or they had this kiss there after she made the struggle to get there and because of these parallels and because I do think that the message they were giving off of Anne Frank was her hope.
Right.
But it was just how they actually portrayed the scene that I didn't really like.
I was put off with the clapping because it took so long throughout the film for them to finally kiss. And then everyone surrounding them is clapping. It's like, no, just have them just stand there and acknowledge that they're kissing, but have the audience in the who's actually viewing the movie clap.
Well, right. That's what I wonder.
I don't need a film to tell me when to clap and when not to.
Do you think they were trying to usher us in clapping? They're like, this is going to have clapping. Let's usher
it
in.
Absolutely. That would have been a realistic response. I think that's what it was. If I was standing there and watched that, I would be like, okay. Like, I'm not saying that that's what everybody would do, but I just kind of, I don't know if that was the right decision, but going back to the statement they were trying to make, if anything to me, what this was Hazel Grace saying, there's no way I'm not climbing these stairs, because if what everything she had been through and whatever she could be up there, I can do this. Like, that's more for me. It was like saying what a horrible time that is, and that even though she has it bad, she could have it worse. That was more the commentary that I got. And I don't even know if that's what they were trying to say, but that's how I felt. Like, there's no effing way I'm not making it to the top of this, because this is important, and this is something that she did, and this is somebody who deserves to be remembered, and whatever it was. So I thought that was very respectful. It wasn't Hazel sitting at the bottom of the stairs being like, I'm not going to climb that, because who cares about, I have struggles too. Like,
it was almost she was climbing it to honor.
Honor her, right. Yeah. Because she knew she still could when Anne could not, So I really, really enjoyed this part of the movie. Again, like you guys are all saying, the only thing that was like, to me, I don't know, was the clapping.
Did you guys think that she was going to die at the house, though?
Yeah, I had that moment, definitely. Okay. Especially the last ladder steps. Like, the first two, I was like, okay, she can make it. And then she gets up, and I knew it was coming, because that the last part is like, hell. Like, I when I got to the top, I was like, like, it's very difficult, and you're very tight.
Yeah.
And when she, I was like, she's not gonna make this. There's zero way that she is going to make this. And I thought maybe she wouldn't die, but she'd end up in the hospital, and her dad would be like, I told you she can't keep up with you, or something. But she did make it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I because at this point in the film, I knew something was gonna happen to Augustus, and Hazel wasn't gonna die. And just knowing that if your lead protagonist, female woman, was going to die in the city where, she's trying to meet her favorite author. Yeah. And then, like, this beautiful city, it didn't fit with her character. And I'm like, why would she die in this beautiful city?
I didn't think she's going to die. I totally had the hospital fear. I definitely was on the Augustus page where I was like, yeah, maybe you should stop.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm for that. I'm for you stopping. I understand.
You don't have to prove yourself. You prove anything.
This kind of reminded me, though, for him to her, of the moment. Okay. There were parallels between her calling 911 when he was in the car and him not preventing her from going up these stairs. I was thinking to myself, like, when do you stop listening to your significant other and start thinking what's best? Huh. And clearly what was best for her here was to not go up those stairs, because she could have died. And clearly what was best for him was for her to call 911 because he could have died. Which was, to me, a difference in their characters. And I'm not saying he shouldn't have let her go up the stairs, because she didn't die and it was okay.
Yeah.
But I was very nervous in this moment that he didn't say enough. And if she had gotten sick, like, what he would have done with himself for not stopping her. So, there comes that point where it's really the breaking point, and you either let them be pissed at you, but you stepped in and saved them, or you let them do what they want. And at the end of the day, she didn't let him do what he wanted. Mm-hmm. He did let her. Yeah. There was a difference in them at their core.
From the man's perspective, I think that were he going to go into this fight and like chat about it for 30 minutes and they argue and everyone's pissed, she still would have won. So he's like, all right, girl, let's do it.
Yeah, like, let me be supportive of you as opposed to a wait.
And also, if you think about it, that Anne Frank house, there were more people surrounding them. So I think it was, having other people also kind of involved in that way can help you push yourself a little bit even more. Mm-hmm. That social psychology that, hey, I'm being watched by other people, I can do this. And then you go to Augustus when he's in the car and he physically can't move, and you can tell he's really at his breaking point. He needs help. And that was a very individualized, singular moment, because it was just them two.
Yeah.
And Hazel had to make that choice to call 911.
I found the quote before you were asking about what kind of guy that Ansel is, and this is what he said when he left the screening feeling very lucky to be healthy. He says, there's so many things to be lucky for. Lucky to be healthy. Lucky to be, like, beautiful. Lucky to be living in America. It's like, what the fuck? It's crazy. I feel like I have more luck than 99.9999% of the people in the world. I'm a lucky fuck. So Yeah. Excuse my French, but that's what he, like, and wow. And that is kind of how I left feeling. Feeling lucky and feeling like, wow, I really want to find the one. Which I think if this movie had to say what they were trying to make people feel, that's probably it.
They got it across to you, because I definitely felt feeling I am lucky, but I didn't get the last part.
Yeah.
But I totally, like, worth seeing, because it was good.
I mean, gotcha. I think both of Shailene and Ansel are very fortunate to have a situation where they can portray such a real story to so many people out there who might be going through this. And I don't think they deterred away from the story at all, that, like, they really can send a good positive message out to people who might be experiencing something like that, and not being offensive in any way, because some people can be really sensitive to these type of stories.
And I don't want to read into it, but I hope that this will let, you know, when you're kids and you, like, see somebody with cancer in a wheelchair or something, it makes you uncomfortable, and so you kind of, like, avoid it. I think this will be a great way for kids to be like, oh, it's like Hazel and Ansel, and they don't think about it at all.
That's a very, it's like, good, a non-issue. Because absolutely, I think that when you're unfamiliar with something, then it's uncomfortable to you. So seeing her, and the only time she takes this off is for 1 second, you know, the oxygen tube. I thought that was beautiful, that she looked so beautiful and kept it on the whole time. Like, it's nothing to be afraid of, that she's wearing that. It is approachable. And I thought that was... The point you make is great, because this does target a younger demographic, and I like that there now is a couple that is not Romeo and Juliet, is not Jack, and, you know, this is somebody that they can look at, they root for, and they do have these problems.
Yeah. And I want to just talk quickly about the music, the soundtrack for this film. I mean,
Roxy, every songs, 5 minutes.
Shazam.
Yeah. What song is
this? The song selection for this film was really, really well done. I mean, we had Ed Sheeran, who, like, love him.
Yeah.
And Birdie, and we had One Republic for the theme song. Just, like, so Codaline, many. Codaline,
Charlie, XCX. Yes,
so many different singers, musicians, and that can cater to the teenage audience as well. And what did we think of the music? Did it reflect the emotions, that everything that was going on?
Yeah. For me... my expertise is in music. Like, what I know when it comes to is music. And obviously it's opinion based, so my opinion is not any better or worse, but this is something that I am very hard to impress with a soundtrack. Usually I'm like, a soundtrack's okay. I thought the soundtrack was awesome. I thought that they picked the right songs for the right time. It was a sound that enough people could relate to, and it wasn't too obscure. It wasn't trying too hard to be different. It really moved the story along for me, and I thought it was excellent. I really did.
I really liked it. I thought the music was a great choice. I thought the underscoring was beautiful. If I'm being really picky, sometimes it stood out to me and was distracting.
I think that's a trend. That's the one thing I want to say. I think with young adult films, particularly a lot with series films, and with just, like, ever since Twilight, there's been a very strong draw towards the soundtrack making for young adult films. Like, I'm talking about away from score and really diving into getting a variety of artists coming together on a young adult project. So, and popular artists as well. And I think that this movie followed that trend, and I think for the most part did it very well, because it does make you... you do hear the music. You do... I found myself, like, humming along or being curious about what was playing. Sometimes it is a little overpowering, because I am thinking, oh, what is this? Instead of about the emotional character. But I think it's a trend, and I think it's interesting, and I think it gives people another something to take away with and buy. And, I mean, I love scores, so that's interesting.
Yeah.
And this is a different sector, and I feel like it's really blooming.
I just feel like the score is there to support things and not be, like, the main star of the show. And sometimes it was, like, taking over for me.
I absolutely agree with you. I think one of the reasons why I loved it so much was because most of the times that they decided to make a strong song was during either a montage and or a text scene, which otherwise it wasn't like we're trying to have this huge argument and here's this big song and it's going in the back.
Yeah.
Like, I really liked when they picked their moments. And I there's something about it that really worked for me. But if you were to say to me, did you notice the music throughout the film? Yes, absolutely. There was not a minute that I did not notice the music. So if that's something that bothers people, which it does bother a lot of people, then it wasn't like the music worked so flawlessly that I didn't even know it was there. Mm-hmm. I was very aware of the soundtrack, which I love.
Yeah, I was aware because I noticed with, I mean, I'm big with music too. Like, I'm big on instrumental scores. And I felt like this being such a sad, emotional, is the perfect film for any slow, soft tone that can go throughout the whole film. I didn't really hear the underscoring, if there even was one.
Oh, wow.
All the songs that...
There was, I promise.
Yeah, okay.
Are you talking about the underscoring or like the soundtrack song choice, though?
Underscore.
Uh-huh. Yeah, an actual instrumental score. The thing with songs in this particular, like when you hear actual words in lyrics, sometimes that takes me out of the film because I'll hear the words and not watch the film. And then like it takes me out of it. But I liked how they used original songs. But also the things with songs and lyrics and stuff, it can make a movie timely. And again, this is a story that can be timeless, but use going back to the iPhone and then music, it could really set a movie just in a certain time.
I guess it doesn't bother me. I think that I can go back to movies and like pulling off the top of my head, so it might not be the best reference, but like a Knight's Tale. Knight's Tale used for their time very modern music. But for me, when I watch it, thinking like the music doesn't date the movie for me, I might get a little bit dated because I'm like, oh, these actors aren't the same age, and like Heath Ledger's in it, yada yada.
Yeah,
but like for me, it's like what year the song came out doesn't date a movie for me.
I don't like that example because it's like set in like a period. You know, was it like 1500s?
That's true.
But it's like another high school movie, like I don't know, like Easy A. Like, she was shooting video blogs, which is, like, the most, like, early 2000 things ever. Yeah.
For me, it's always changing so fast. The technology, everything's changing that, like, no matter what you do, this movie is going to look different than a movie is going to look in 20 years. Like, and it's going to be dated.
Yeah.
So, for me, like, so they land in Amsterdam, and they play this song called Boom Clap by Charlie, I think XCX is her name, but... It was like an upbeat, awesome song, but it wasn't a top 40 hit. You know, it wasn't something that I was like, oh, I remember when that song came out. I was sitting in my eighth grade classroom, and, you know, it wasn't like that for me.
No.
It was like a great song that, yes, if I looked it up, it would date it for me, but it wasn't like huge of this time period. The biggest song for me in it was probably Codaline's song, but that even that, like, I don't think that everybody saw the soundtrack and was like, oh, I knew every song in that. Or you think about, like, Forrest Gump and the soundtrack to that. You know, I love every song in that movie. It's very true to that time period. But to me, am I watching that and thinking, oh, this movie is out of, you know, I can't relate to this. No.
I don't know that that's a problem, though.
Forrest Gump, though.
There's a what?
There's an instrumental theme song to Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a problem, like, to set movies in a time and not have it be able to, like, I know you have to, like, be able to relate to it many years later, but to, like, have it be, like, a perfect image of that time, that's, like, why The Breakfast Club is, like, so phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's why it just really didn't bother me. The music, the lyrics, all of it, especially because the lyrics were strongest when there was silence.
Yeah.
It just
worked. Okay.
Follow
me.
Interesting. Okay, so overall, I think we all did enjoy this movie. It definitely caters to our demographic, being the young 20-something year olds. Who would we recommend this to? Adults, to anyone else who think wouldn't like this movie?
I mean, I feel like everyone's already seeing it after the box office. Yeah. They had.
I mean, I feel like it caters to, like, the younger crowd, even like the, like, teens. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it to, like, a group of guys going to hang out, like, after beers, but I think everybody else. I think guys would find something to enjoy in it if they go with, like, a girl on a date.
When I walk out of movies, I ask myself, like, very specific questions, and one of them is, would I recommend this to my grandparents? And the answer is no, I would not. So whatever that means for this film, would I recommend it to my little sister? Yes. Would I recommend it to any of you guys sitting at this table? Absolutely. But would I recommend this to my grandparents who go to see movies once a week for this to be their once a week movie? No.
Is it because the subject matter is so heavy?
Yeah, it's heavy. And also, I feel like they would watch this and be like, they would just be sad. The whole thing is very sad. So I guess it has to do with being heavy. There isn't really a silver lining here that the way that grandparents like movies to be, especially based on how they were.
Okay.
I don't know. I just wouldn't. I wouldn't recommend this to them. I wouldn't recommend this to my father. To my father's girlfriend, yes, but to my father, no.
I think if you've lost, like, anybody close to you within the last, like, year, you got to skip it.
Yeah,
have to skip it, or you should watch it to appreciate everything.
No, I think that's almost like too soon.
It's too close. Yeah.
I know what you mean. I think that things like this help you to see sometimes, to not maybe move forward, but see that you are not alone, kind of thing.
I think after a period of time, yeah.
Also,
yeah.
Very much dependent on the person.
Yeah.
That's such a hard thing because so many people grieve in different ways. I understand what you mean, especially because if someone's feeling very negative,
yeah,
you're not going to go send them to see this because it ain't going to help.
Right.
It might help later on, or like
we're not playing this in the hospital. Absolutely. No. So I do see what you're saying. So there are. Yeah. I'm not saying I would recommend this movie to everybody, and neither are you.
Would you rate this high up with like the other movies that we've seen that kind of delve in the same, like A Walk to Remember, Dying Young, Griffin and Phoenix? Would you categorize it with the same type of films?
Yeah, absolutely. I relate to A Walk to Remember very closely, but I think that movie was great in its way. I think this movie is great. The style is very similar to 500 Days of Summer, which is also the writers wrote. So yeah. I would more categorize it with that. That's one of my top five favorite movies of all time. So this, wasn't quite, but it was at the same caliber. I thought that this movie was amazing.
Yeah, I think that it was done very well. I'll see it again. I'm going to put it, it definitely goes in the category of like drama, almost.
Oh, yeah, I would do the drama as well. I put it there.
And
just kidding.
You know, I'm going to watch this, like, I might even buy this movie. I'll watch it again.
Wow.
But when I'm looking for a great dramatic love story that wants to sweep me away, I'm not going to pick it.
So when you go through a breakup and you're like eating your ice cream and you want to sit on your couch and like call your friend, hey, you're not going to put this movie on.
No.
Okay.
I feel like this movie will define like art next like 5 years the way The Notebook was in the early 2000s. Like, oh my God, he didn't even cry during The Notebook. Like, this will be that new thing.
You think that this is that level?
Yeah.
This
like, oh my God, they wouldn't even cry during Fault in Our Stars. Wow. Like, I can't get to watch Fault in Our Stars with me.
See, and this wouldn't be one of the movies that I would make a boyfriend of mine watch with me.
You have a list?
Yeah, it's like Titanic.
Any boy would be lucky to watch any movie with you, Sarah.
You have to watch Titanic.
All right.
Well, that seems like the everything I think we've discussed about everything.
Oh, I think so.
Where can we all find you to keep talking about fun movies? Anything like that, Roxy?
You can find me everywhere at Roxy's Dryer.
And I'm also on everywhere at Jeff Masters 1.
Check him out on Book Circle Online.
Yes, we have a Fault in Our Stars up too.
Exactly,
and you're on AfterBuzz
and AfterBuzz TV.
Wow, I'm here or at AfterBuzz TV. So you have to like find me on podcasts.
Yeah, you can find all of us here at AfterBuzz TV, and you can find all of us here actually at Anatomy of a Movie on Twitter at Movie Anatomy, and on our website, check out all of our other fun dissections and our future dissections that we have yet to cover at anatomyofamovie.com. You can follow me here everywhere. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you sure enjoy this podcast, and we hope to talk to you soon about our next dissection. The way our horizons meet, and all of the lights will lead into the night with me.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.